humor, JB automatically checked the action on his mini-Uzi, cocking the Styrog hand blaster that he wore in a holster on his hip.
How do you feel, man whose eyes see more?
The shaman noticed that each member of the group was taking out their weapons, doing so with a casual, professional ease that told much of how they had all survived so long. The albino boy hefted his cannon, which looked too big for him to even hold. Lori, on the other hand, was reloading a delicate little Walther PPK-22 with polished pearl handles. Ryan favored a Sig Sauer P226 9mm pistol with a built-in baffle silencer that fired 15 rounds. Slung across his shoulders was a gun like nothing man whose eyes see more had ever seen before. It was a pale gray rectangular automatic rifle. Jack had told him that it was a Heckler & Koch G12. Doc was the only one of the group who carried a gun that most of the Apaches would have recognized. It was a monstrously heavy and outdated blaster called a Lama, a conventional revolver that fired 9 rounds of 36 caliber ammo. But there was also a second barrel that could be used to fire a single round of 63 caliber scattergun ball, like a sawed-off shotgun. Doc had told the shaman that the gun was just about as old as he was. Man whose eyes see more realized that he'd allowed his thoughts to drift as he stared around at the weaponry of his 6 new friends.
Sorry, JB. Where did you ask me? My mind was elsewhere.
The armorer adjusted his fedora and cracked a smile.
Just asked how you were feeling, man whose eyes see more.
Ryan stepped toward the door to the Matrans chamber, but then paused.
Man whose eyes see more?
Yes, Ryan?
About your name.
It is the one given me because I have the power
of... I know. It's just that... Well, it's too long to say. If we're in a firefight and I want you to cover me, by the time I shout your name, I'd likely be dead meat.
I don't...
We've all got short names. Ryan, Jack, JB, Doc, Lori, Christy, and... Man whose eyes see more. We can't call you man. It'd be confusing.
Don't have other name?
No.
I don't think you want us to call you Seymour.
There must be a name you'd like to be called. Some special name. Know what I mean?
I know what you mean. There is a name, but you would think me foolish.
He shuffled his bare feet on the cool metal discs, looking down in embarrassment.
If you want to ride with us, brother, then you better learn not to feel bad about anything. Tell us. If we laugh, then we laugh. That's all.
You're among friends.
Well, we had an antique CD player in the rancheria. I don't know where it came from, but it was old. Years before my time. And there was music. One that was my favorite.
Go on. We got lots of CDs in our redoubt. Keeper's favorite was Barry someone. I doesn't remember. I liked Aerosmith and Bruce Springsteen. What did you like?
They were very old, I think. Brothers. I played their disc over and over until I knew all their songs. Such harmonies that even white painted woman could not imagine.
Doc pointed a gnarled finger at the Apache in rising excitement.
I know them. Two brothers from Kentucky. Can't rightly recall.
The shaman looked over at Doc with an almost reverential awe in his expression.
The Everly brothers.
You want to be called Everly? That sounds like a pretty girly name to me.
No, I've always loved their given first names. They were called Don and Phil, but it runs together as one name, Donphil, like that. If you don't think it's too foolish, then...
Fine with me.
Ryan looked around at the other six.
No objections, I guess?
Jack walked over to the Indian and reached up to shake his hand.
Welcome to the party, Donphil Moore.
Of course. He has to have a second name. Man whose eyes see more, Donphil Moore.
And so it was. Ryan sometimes wondered how many gateways were scattered throughout what remained of the old United States of America. He knew from his travels with a trader that some regions were gone forever, mainly along the earthquake-flawed West Coast, with the whole of Baja California sliding into the lapping Pacific. Over the years, their explorations had revealed many of their doubts, some of which held the secret chambers locked within them. But without the uniquely specialized knowledge of Doc Tanner, their mysteries would never have been solved. Even now, to use them for making a journey along the invisible waves of the Matrans chain was to risk life. Even Doc didn't know the codes that were needed to control destinations. All that could be done was to enter the chamber and trigger the mechanism by closing the door. A number of the gateways had to have been totally destroyed or vandalized over the past century, and Ryan's first fears had been that the group might materialize in the suffocating center of some fallen mountain or a mile beneath the unforgiving sea. Now he had come to hope that the devices somehow resisted sending a person to any gateway that wasn't still functioning adequately. But that didn't mean it was possible to escape from the redoubt that contained the gateway, nor even to use the gateway to escape again. And when the gateway door was opened, no one had any idea of what dangers or horrors might be waiting on the other side. Ryan set his fingers on the curved trigger of the G-12 and reached for the handle of the chamber door.
Ready? Then let's go.
The light that had filtered through the turquoise walls had been dimmed, like a far-off lamp glimpsed underwater. As soon as the door began to ease silently open, the light flooded in, dazzlingly bright. Ryan shaded his eye.
Fire blast. There's some special kind of power source working here, Doc, giving out this much energy.
Like the others, Doc had at first also turned his head away, then squinted through watering eyes into the room beyond the gateway chamber.
Upon my soul, friends, the power of many a candle here. I have not seen, nor can I imagine why, unless this gateway had some special function.
Like what?
I fear that I can't even make what one might call an educated guess, my dear Miss Roth. There were some special sections that were on a need-to-know basis, and therefore off-limits to me.
But you were on Cerberus, Doc.
Indeed. But you must recall the concept of the Russian doll, my dear fellow. There is a huge doll, and when you open it, there is a large doll within, and when you open that one, there is a medium-sized doll within, and when you open that one, there is a smaller doll within, and
we get the picture, Doc.
Ryan feared that the old man's mind was going to slide off into one of its lateral spirals that brought him perilously close to madness. Apparently, J.B. echoed his sentiments.
Yeah, we see. Russian dolls. What's that got to do with Project Cerberus?
Doc's forehead furrowed with confusion.
What's what got to do with what?
You said about special gateways not being part of Project Cerberus?
Correct. Give that customer a cigar. Cerberus was the doll within Over Project Whisper. In its own turn, Over Project Whisper was concealed from the eyes of the public and the media beneath the accommodating skirts of our country's totality concept. You understand?
Yeah. Double clear, Doc. Some things you knew and some you didn't.
Ryan turned and pushed the door open farther, his eye becoming accustomed to the brightness. Every single Matrans chamber he'd seen had been part of an identical setup. There was the small anteroom opening off the glass panel chamber, which measured about 5 long paces by 3 and contained an empty table against one wall. Beyond that, Ryan knew there would be a main control area, all whirling comp wheels, disks, dials, and flickering lights. Lori pointed.
Look! What's it saying, Doc? Can't read loopy words.
Called graffiti, it was. Some poor devil scrawled this generations back, my dear lovely child. It says, I don't have a drinking problem except when I can't get a drink. It's a joke.
No one laughed. The words had been scrawled on the pale cream wall just at the side of a row of bare shelves.